Hello, welcome to the debate. I'm Kavit Ahway. It's official. Russian time will be enacted by the end of the month in Crimea, and the currency will be changed to the Russian ruble. Crimeans have voted, and overwhelmingly, they voiced joining the Russian Federation. Although the fundamental question still lies in the referendum's legality, the West has made its move with sanctions as high up as U.S. sanctioning Russia's Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Rogozin. Russian Senate Speaker described the sanctions as, quote, unprecedented political blackmail. This is while Russia said it is ready to cooperate with the West if the country adopts a federal constitution and accepts the Crimea's secession. What all of this means is that this West-Russia crisis is far from over. In this debate, we'll discuss the fallout and what the West and Russia's next moves will be, and whether U.S. and EU share common goals in their approach.
Several months ago, when Ukraine was rocked by a wave of anti-government protests, nobody could even imagine that the autonomous region of Crimea would one day vote in favor of joining Russia. For Western-backed interim officials in Kiev, it's difficult to accept that nearly 97% of the Crimeans voted on Sunday on separation from Ukraine. The Sunday vote results allowed Crimea's Supreme Council to pass a decree applying to join Russia. The council also nationalized all Ukrainian state property on the peninsula. Meanwhile, Crimea's lawmakers declared the Russian ruble, the peninsula's second official currency, vowing to disband the Ukrainian military units stationed across the region. Crimea's referendum results have sparked swift responses from both Washington and the European Union. Following the vote, the U.S. imposed sanctions on several Russian officials and authorities in Crimea.
Today I'm announcing a series of measures that will continue to increase the costs on Russia and on those responsible for what is happening in Ukraine. First, as authorized by the executive order I signed 2 weeks ago, we are imposing sanctions on specific individuals responsible for undermining the sovereignty, territorial integrity, and government of Ukraine.
In a similar move, the European Union announced punitive measures against Russians accused of playing a major role in the Crimean vote. Latest developments surrounding Crimea are considered to be the deepest confrontation between Washington and the Kremlin since the Cold War. The US and its Western allies reject the Crimea referendum as illegal, arguing that Russia has vowed to respect its neighbor's territorial integrity under a 1994 agreement. Russia, however, justifies that the vote was fully in line with the norms of international law and the UN Charter. According to many, the current crisis in Ukraine could have been avoided last month when ousted President Viktor Yanukovych signed a power-sharing agreement with the opposition groups.
All of the international laws and rules are being bent by the European Union and the US to conceal the fact that they've carried out effectively a rather desperate coup d'etat against a formerly sovereign country. So the West has violated the Ukraine treaty prior to the action in Crimea.
Under the deal, Yanukovych had promised to form a coalition government, hold early elections, and revert to the country's 2004 constitution. Despite the 21st February deal, the Ukrainian parliament removed the president from power, a move considered by many analysts as a coup against Yanukovych.
Let's bring in our guests and see what they think. Former U.S. Senate foreign policy analyst James Jutras joins us from Washington. And from the Congressional Defense Policy Advisor, Frederick Peterson, joins us from Tampa. Gentlemen, welcome. Well, Frederick Peterson, let me start with you. The Crimeans have voted and the West has taken action, sanctions imposed on several Russian officials, minus Putin, to include U.S. sanctioning of Russia's Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Rogozin. Is the U.S., not to mention the EU, taking the right path in the way they are dealing with Russia?
The short answer to that is absolutely not. And the premise of the the statement was that this was an election. This was an utter, obvious, flagrant sham of a facade of a falsity that is held out to the world as an election when there was very little, there was actual an active boycott in the vote by those who disagree with the Russian invasion of a sovereign nation, which was guaranteed its sovereignty by a Russian signature in 1994. Not only that, but the invasion was followed up by a faux plebiscite among the people with zero international supervision and actually no international monitoring whatsoever. This is an utter sham that should be wholly rejected by the world community as an aggression, a bold-faced aggression not seen since World War II. This is a horror, and the threads that are taken and being weaved together by Russia in an expansionist policy here beyond their own border in record time is very, very dangerous. What we have is a West that doesn't quite know how to confront this. Once again, President Putin has looked Obama in the eye and seen not a man but a marshmallow who is confronting stormtroopers from Russia with pea shooters and marshmallow slingshots in diplomatic letters of objection and stern language, promising even more stern language to follow. All prices that Putin is willing to take and in fact enhances his reputation as a regional, if not global bully, and merely rewards bad behavior with a promise, I'm afraid, of more bad behavior to follow. This, I plead with the world and all of good heart and common sense to reject and stand up boldly against this action, and or the world is headed in a most dangerous and regrettable direction.
Well, James Petraeus, I'm really tempted to ask you what you think about Frederick Peterson's comparison of Barack Obama to marshmallow, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go on to the route of sanctions that has been taking place by the EU and the U.S. And it was very interesting, James Petraeus, when the EU foreign policy chief Catherine Ashton was pressed on the question of whether their sanctions were softer than the U.S. She came out and she said, quote, "They make their own decision. We make ours." Are we seeing then that the EU and the U.S. are not really on the same page in terms of the severity of sanctions that have been in place? And of course, why?
I don't know if we're on the same page or not at this point. I have not seen in detail what the European sanctions look like, but I understand they would be similar visa cancellations, some financial freezes of specific individuals like Mr. Rogozin, who recently tweeted that he doesn't have any Western accounts anyway, so why does he care? And I'm sure many of the other people on that list have long since moved their assets. So I agree to that limited extent with the gentleman in Tampa. So I think the real question is, where does this go from here? If there's a move to put more severe sanctions on Russia, things, for example, like freezing Russian financial institutions out of the world, financial markets and so forth, the Russians will retaliate. And this will become a downward spiral that will do a lot of damage to everybody, but simply will not change the situation in Ukraine except for the worst. It will not do anything about the future of Crimea, and it will keep, unfortunately, the instability in Kiev in play. I do have to take issue with some of the comments from Tampa. For example, this idea that this is an unprecedented aggression and so forth. I'm afraid that that coin has been badly devalued by our own government for the last couple decades in the Balkans and in Bosnia and Kosovo, in Libya, in Iraq, President Obama's plans to attack Syria. These are actions taken out of the Security Council, out of the realm of legality. And let's remember, these were optional interventions for the United States, places where our vital national interests were not affected, where American interest was quite tangential, whereas for Russia to see Ukraine dragged in to a hostile orientation by a violent change of government in Kiev is something they cannot live with any more than we could live with such an eventuality in Mexico City or in Ottawa. As far as the referendum goes, there are many things one could criticize, but I don't think anybody doubts that it reflects more or less the overall opinion of people in Crimea, where 65% of the population are ethnic Russians. And of course, yes, most of the Ukrainians and Crimean Tatars boycotted that vote. But for example, in the early 1992 in Bosnia, when Muslims and Croats voted for independence and Serbs, a constituent nation, boycotted the vote, the United States rushed to recognize that country and validated that referendum because it suited somebody's geopolitical notions. And I think that's what we really see here.